On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I discuss the recent NBA player strike, plus more updates on the Nets coaching search, and we bounce around the NBA playoffs. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. Joining me as always, Marcus Barahal. And what has been a really fascinating few days in the NBA really got kickstarted, of course, with the Nets getting swept by the Raptors and kind of everything really kind of flown from there. But Marcus, in all seriousness, how are you?
I'm good. A lot happened in the NBA because a lot didn't happen, ironically enough. There was a massive strike, which we'll talk about. There's also some basketball stuff that we'll get into, but I feel like we have to start with the strike, Josh.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think everything kind of kicked off on Wednesday when, you know, Bucks and Magic were scheduled to be the first game of the day. And obviously there had been some, you know, voices like George Hill and others on the Bucks team who, you know, have kind of expressed throughout really like, why are we here playing? And that was of course elevated after the terrible shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where he was left paralyzed, and really kind of the outcry of the Bucks and really everyone kind of in the NBA started from there. So the Bucks, you know, after I think some back and forth decided they weren't going to play, that trickled down to the rest of the games. It happened with the Thursday games and, you know, basically players only meeting. Everyone was on pins and needles saying, are they going to play the rest of the season? Is it just everyone going to pack up and go home? And what's the point of all this? But I think we're probably both on the same page that, you know, it's at the point where enough is enough and any action the players decide to take is totally fine with me in, you know, hoping that they can get some justice for what's going on there and basically, you know, helping anyone out there just in kind of the fight towards equality.
Yeah. There had been kind of talk about the Raptors and the Celtics who had their second round was scheduled to tip off, I believe, on Thursday initially. They had kind of discussed like, potentially not playing that game or just like what their options were, I guess. And then, like you mentioned, that Bucks game, which was scheduled for Wednesday afternoon, George Hill, who you mentioned, just kind of led the charge. And then Sterling Brown, who himself was a victim of police brutality a few years ago with the Bucks, he kind of followed suit and said, yeah, I'm not going to play. And then from what I've heard, Giannis was then the third guy who was like, listen, we're not going to like leave these two guys behind. Like if anyone on the team doesn't want to play, we're not going to play. And so obviously the players agreed with that regardless, but I feel like the power of Giannis as the soon to be two-time MVP, sort of the face of the franchise, kind of the best player in the league at this point, or one of, if not the best, making that kind of statement was huge. The team didn't come out. The Magic then who had come out for warmups, they went in. But I think you have to credit George Hill and the Bucks players, and then also the Raptors and Celtics players who had kind of been discussing maybe doing this also for just kind of kickstarting everything. And I think when the bubble was initially proposed and there was, you know, like the pre-approved messages on the back, I know Damian Lillard tried to have Oscar Grant's name on the back of his jersey, and the league didn't have that as an option for him. They had like certain predetermined phrases that we've seen, like Black Lives Matter, equality, those kinds of things, which obviously are still things that need to be said, but just like sort of the oversight, I think, of what the players could and couldn't do when they're already living in a bubble and like under such strict watch kind of probably made them feel like, okay, we're like not really doing all that we could be doing because we're trapped in a bubble, because any message that we want to say has to kind of run through the league sort of saying like, yep, this like huge company, the NBA, approves of this message. Like, let's kind of do something that's just us showing that we are the product, the NBA can't exist if players don't want to play. So they took that into their own hands and they kind of said, like what's happened is obviously unacceptable. And the way that the NBA has handled it has been better than nothing, obviously, but there's still more that could be done and there's more that should be done. And so obviously just want to first and foremost credit the players for making that kind of massive decision.
Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, they did a great job because, you know, kind of there definitely was a path for them just to be kind of complacent and say, you know, we're going to play the season. And even though kind of, you know, what we're actually here to play for is kind of being less and less thought of because people are kind of getting in the weeds on the basketball minutia. They wanted to reset the messaging. And that's why, you know, this season kind of got kicked off again. Yes, there's a lot of money at stake, but it wasn't just because of that and because we all wanted to see basketball. There was a higher purpose. And as with anything in society, you know, over time, you know, people's kind of outrage and really, you know, I guess motivation to seek justice kind of wanes and wanes, except for those people that are really kind of at the forefront of it. And this is a great way just to say, no, we're not here just because we want to see, you know, Giannis potentially match up against Kawhi or whatever. It's because we're raising awareness for the injustice that, you know, Black and Indigenous people of color face in this society. So I give a ton of credit to really all of the players for standing up for this when it's definitely not the easy thing to do. And it just shows that they have all the power in this league and they can take this product of basketball that we all love and we all love to talk about so easily from us. So in turn, we should not only support their cause, but, you know, whether it's providing dollars behind it, you know, media content, protesting, you can't just be an ally in thought. You really have to go out and support the cause in the myriad of ways that they're really hoping and asking for.
Yeah. And so, kind of after all this happened, like the rest of the games were suspended that day. And then there were some meetings that took place. It seemed for a little bit of time that the games wouldn't resume and that the season would just kind of be stopped, would be ended, and we wouldn't get a resolution to the season because I think it was mostly the Lakers and the Clippers, it seemed like, were frustrated with how things were handled and how there wasn't a huge plan going forward. This was like, obviously talked about beforehand, as we mentioned with the Raptors and the Celtics, but in terms of for the Bucks, like it was kind of a last minute decision not to play that specific game, even if they maybe discussed this idea of potentially sitting out a game, it wasn't really decided ahead of time. So there was a lot of tension with that and tension, as I mentioned before, just with like living in a bubble environment in the first place. But things eventually did get resolved. There were certain measures that were discussed with ownership, with different people in the Wisconsin government, and I think that they got some things accomplished. But I think that the biggest thing for me that I'll take away from this and going forward was I don't remember who exactly said this, but basically it might have been LeBron even that if the owners and if like the people that they are trying to like pressure into action don't take action, like this will happen again and they'll stop play again. And so like I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying like, oh, the players like capitulated kind of too early and gave up all their leverage by saying that they wanted the games to resume on Friday or Saturday. But like I completely get what the players are saying, that like, we'll get back to playing. We gave you some things that you should try, like do these things. If you don't do these things, we'll be right back where we are. Wednesday through Friday. So I appreciated that they didn't just sort of say like, yeah, we got what we wanted. Like we got more attention. We got the owners to kind of commit to making all the arenas polling sites and doing all these other things. Like, all right, now we'll go back to playing. They said like, glad you guys are doing that. But also if you don't keep on doing stuff, we'll exert our power once again. So I appreciated that.
Yeah, no, it gives them a lot, I think a lot more leverage, and it really, I think will, you know, help others be proactive in supporting the cause. And, you know, hopefully they do capitulate and the players don't have to, you know, pause games and I guess boycott again. But I think all in all, it was a very healthy, positive exercise, and you know, hopefully will do a lot of good in the wake of a really obviously unfortunate, tragic time.
Yeah. I mean, like the onus to like fix these problems should be on the government. It should be on people who've like used and abused this system to accumulate just like absurd amounts of wealth. Like those are the people who should be tasked with finding steps to solutions for these problems. Like it shouldn't be on NBA players to have to like plan out all these things and send it to like legislation for people in the government or for team owners or whoever. Like that's a little absurd to me. So yeah, hopefully it doesn't come to that. And hopefully those people do their jobs and use the money that they have.
Marcus, should we get onto more, I guess, mundane matters that maybe are important to us in our little bubble, but clearly in the scope of things are not.
Basketball is back now, so there's stuff to talk about.
Yeah. Coaching search. So I think this kind of got, we didn't get to cover this as much because we were so dug into the Nets-Raptors playoff series, but let's get into the Greg Popovich rumors, and then there's some stuff on Ty Lue on his contract and what he's looking for, and some other little coaching tidbits here or there. As the Nets are fully out of the season now, Jacques Vaughn's, I guess, interim resume is fully complete. Obviously, he'll have a chance at the head coaching job, but, you know, his story is kind of set in stone for now with the Nets, and now they can evaluate him along with a number of other candidates that that they are courting.
Yeah, so I talked a little bit about Popovich. I did, like, a pre solo thing for like a couple minutes on Tuesday when we put up your free agent list, the rundown for that. So I talked a little bit about it, and my biggest takeaway there was basically that the fact that these Popovich rumors keep resurfacing is kind of a red flag to me about all the other candidates, and like the fact that there's this guy who's like under contract with another team and like, oh yeah, maybe we'll bring him in, just kind of tells me that they don't really love any of the other candidates. I mean, what do you think about the Pop rumor, Josh? And do you think it's at all feasible, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I can obviously see where it's initially coming from, just given, you know, the ties with some of like Sean Marks and Jacques Vaughn, and you have obviously some stars on the Nets right now, and you're looking for a coach with a ton of pedigree, and Pop certainly has that. And, you know, I think the Spurs-Nets ties have basically been, you know, they've been talked about since Sean Marks was hired, and trying to basically build an organization that could be the Spurs of the East. That said, I think it still is far-fetched. You obviously have, you know, I think people are saying that, oh, you know, maybe it's because Popovich, obviously extremely vocal supporter of the NBA players, and also extremely anti Donald Trump and what's happening in this world right now, and someone who's big in the promotion for equality. And you have him coaching a team where it's owned by Peter Holt, and you know his family obviously has questionable politics, so maybe that makes him unhappy. But you know, no rumor of him being unhappy. He's 71. Does he want to basically start over with another organization that has maybe superstars that are a bit more temperamental? Because you have to remember, all the superstars he's coached, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, even LaMarcus Aldridge,
Kawhi Leonard,
these are all very mild-mannered guys. He's really never dealt with anyone kind of in that diva-type role, if you want to compare KD and Kyrie to that, anyone kind of the eccentric mold who really needs to be you know, personality manager. It doesn't seem like Pop wants to deal with that. Doesn't seem like he has the patience for it necessarily. And then you have the Nets, whose roster definitely needs a lot of work. And then you're going to talk about trading assets for him, maybe a first round pick and another first round pick. Is that really kind of the best use of resources in building a championship team around, you know, around Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving? You need other guys that can support that.
Yeah. And it just doesn't make sense. Like we've kind of talked about it a few times where like the top couple coaches and, you know, maybe Pop is still in there, and the bottom couple coaches, like they make a difference game to game. Like Nick Nurse, his adjustments that he makes for the Raptors, like really make a difference. Brad Stevens, same thing. But like for, for the bulk of coaches, I would say, like, if you're in the like 6 to 25 range for NBA head coaches at a given time, you're not really like moving a ton outside of like maybe some things on the margins. But so yeah, to your point, I don't think it really makes sense to like give up assets for a guy who, while he's been in that top group for a really long time, he is also 71. And you never really know like when he maybe like loses touch with these guys who are like much younger than him, who are like 40 years younger than him, in the case of a guy like Kevin Durant, who I think is 31 or 32. So it just doesn't really make sense to me. I think Ty Lue is definitely a good candidate, although now with more jobs opening up, like there's no real guarantee that they get him. And so I don't know, like if it's not Pop and it's not Ty Lue, Jacques Vaughn, I'm still okay with, but like, I don't know, it kind of falls off a cliff in terms of choices after that top two or three.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. Like there's a dearth of, like even Ty Lue, we've been talking about, I guess he's the best and
right,
but we're not super keen on him also. So I think it's like, okay, none of the options right now are good. Maybe let's look for kind of what the superstar coach would be in trade. Like, realistically, how often do these things even happen? Like, yes, there was the Doc Rivers thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that has worked out for the Clippers. You know, he's kind of been steadying the ship for them throughout a number of, you know, different iterations for the team. But it's not like he's won a championship for them or even gotten to the finals. I think, like, trading for coaches in the NBA just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's such a player-driven league and dominated league. And I guess you want to like have a really top tier coach with pedigree that can control kind of KD and Kyrie and just kind of, you know, have the authority and pedigree in their eyes to really kind of keep them in line, so they're not going like totally rogue and they're still playing within the team system. But you also have to think, does the coach want to be coaching them? And Pop, you know, doesn't have anything to prove right now. He's a tremendous legacy. And I think, you know, we've seen it with guys like Phil Jackson, where they put themselves in one kind of a situation that maybe isn't the right exact fit for them, and it can just go completely off the rails and doesn't work out for anyone.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened so infrequently. Like the Doc Rivers example you brought up, I would say that's worked out for the Clippers. Doc's been really good there. Stan Van Gundy, I'm just like looking this up now. There was like a similar thing when he went to the Magic from the Heat, but obviously they had Pat Riley kind of like waiting in the wing, so that wasn't really a comparable situation to this. And like, other than that, there's not a ton of history of it in the NBA. So it would kind of be unprecedented, and like, yeah, maybe it works out, but also like, I don't know, the Nets have a history of like giving up draft picks that come back to haunt them, especially recently. So I would be really wary to do that. It seems like, from what I've been reading, like they're going to consult a lot of the players in terms of like who they want to coach the team, not just KD and Kyrie. And I think a lot of those bubble guys, like Caris LeVert, Garrett Temple, some of the other players who were with the Nets in the bubble, Joe Harris and Jared Allen also, I think those guys really like Jacques Vaughn and are going to try to make a case for him. I think ultimately Sean Marks is going to weigh the opinions of KD and Kyrie more, but I think maybe in listening to those guys who played in the bubble, like maybe they kind of knock the Popovich idea out of the way a little bit and say like, you know, we have a great coach here already. Like we don't really need to give up something. Like if anything, sure, hire Ty Lue, hire someone else who's qualified, but like there's no reason to like trade an asset for a coach.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially since the Nets have already gotten, you know, off a couple assets recently that could have helped them. Yeah, it'll be interesting, especially if Marks does consult kind of a wide range of players, which has been you know, talked about and reported. Obviously, KD and Kyrie are going to have kind of the most sway on an individual basis, but does that kind of group mentality of some of the guys that have been there the last few months, you know, weigh strongly? Ultimately, I think we can both agree that if KD and Kyrie aren't keen on the coach, they're not going to get hired. And I'm still, you know, unsure on what their opinion on Jacques Vaughn is, but, you know, Vaughn does seem to have a number of people really campaigning for him within the organization.
Yeah, and I don't know, because like you just said, like the most important thing is that the coach like meshes with KD and Kyrie, and that's like really hard to know, especially given the fact that KD has played zero games as a Net. So we don't really know anything about what he's thinking or like what kind of style he would want to play, even just because he hasn't been out there with any of these guys. So there's a ton that's up in the air. Add in the fact that there's a pandemic going on. You can't really like conduct like workouts or like a ton of in-person interviews unless they're like socially distanced and all that stuff. So it's just a lot of wrinkles in this coaching search, which hopefully is wrapped up semi soon. I mean, I can't imagine it dragging on too much longer, because like if a team like the Rockets like blows their lead against the Thunder, like maybe that job opens up. Like there's a lot of variables that could come into play the longer that this goes on.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'll be excited to see kind of like the first coaching domino hot, like fall, just because there's a number of good jobs opening up. You have to think there might be more opening up if the Rockets, like when the Rockets get out.
Have you thought about Nate McMillan as a possibility for the Nets? Does that make any sense? I just saw like when he was let go, I was a little bit surprised, but I don't know if it would make sense as a fit.
Yeah, here's the thing with Nate McMillan. So I think he actually did I didn't love him in Portland.
Yeah.
But thought he did a really, really good job with the Pacers, and think he's kind of getting the short end of the shrift given they've had a lot of injuries and like, I guess by seeding, obviously they shouldn't have gotten swept by the Heat, but
yeah, it reminded me of Kenny a little bit.
Yeah, it was just weird. And obviously they have the whole Oladipo situation that's kind of hanging over the organization, where it's like the guy that was a superstar has kind of been usurped by other players, but he still thinks he's the man. So it's a tough situation there. And I thought he did a really good job. I don't know if he's the right type of coach in the Nets organization, because you have kind of one shot really to get this right with KD and Kyrie, and at least this iteration of the team, given that they, both have 2 years left in their contract. Obviously, Kyrie extremely injury prone, KD coming off a big injury, and he's on the other side of 30, and you're not sure how he's going to be, and a questionable fit around role players. So you really have to get this right. I don't love Nate McMillan in kind of think he's the perfect fit, but comparing him to some of the other options,
right?
Definitely think we should throw his hat in the mix and see where it goes. I mean, is he any better or worse than Ty Lue?
Yeah, I mean, I would think he's a better coach than Ty Lue, but I think Ty Lue's really good at personality management, which is what we saw in Cleveland, and that makes sense given that he's Doc Rivers's assistant or lead assistant right now with the Clippers. Just like a ton of he's gotten experience coaching superstars. Like he's coached LeBron, Kyrie, and then now as an assistant with Kawhi and Paul George. So like Nate McMillan, Oladipo, you mentioned, that's probably the biggest name he's coached in Indiana. But like I don't know, it's always hard to say how much credit for development goes to the coach, to the player, to just like the situation or role or like a lot of different things. But like Oladipo's really improved under him, Sabonis really improved under him, Brogdon, who I kind of thought would maybe take a step back just because he wasn't playing with Giannis and Middleton and those other guys who maybe made him look better, he looked really good this year. So I don't know. I think Nate McMillan's a good coach. It's just like you said, like the only thing that really matters is like if the coach would work with KD and Kyrie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think he does have a little bit of like the, not like a total Sam Cassell thing, but he was like a solid player. So
right.
He hopefully have more credibility with some of those guys. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm a bit weary of those guys where it's like they had a good coaching stint, but when you look at like what he's done, he's had a long track record. Like I'm actually surprised. I forgot how long he was a coach at Portland, and then also with the Sonics in the early 2000s. So he's been a coach for a while and has had mediocre success. And he's turned around a little bit, but he gets the playoffs a lot. He's never gotten past the second round. So I don't know. In kind of coaching for what does he coach for? 16 seasons and only making it past the first round, it looks like once. Not a great track record.
Yeah, that's not great.
not ideal.
But then again, when's the last time like Jeff Van Gundy or Mark Jackson made it out of the first round? Like they haven't even coached in like a decade or whatever. So
I don't know.
I just think like once you get past like the pop rumors or whatever, and then it's like maybe Ty Lue and Vaughn like on a similar tier. And then after that, I really don't know. So I was just suggesting maybe why not Nate McMillan? I don't know.
I'm still a Stan Van guy after what Chris Mayfield said.
He's a king on Twitter. All of his tweets are either basketball, political, or cookies.
I know, I know. Did you see that someone ripped off the Biden sign in his lawn?
Yeah, yeah. He bought a few of them, though.
I know, I know. Yeah, I think I'm all in on Stan Van at this point. Any thoughts on Ty Lue saying he wants $7 million a year, or people around him saying he wants that much?
I feel like sure, because the coach's salary isn't part of the salary cap, right? It's like a separate thing. So yeah, like what does it matter?
Yeah, I mean that would be like one of the top five highest paid coach salaries. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple things. One, if you win a championship, you automatically get a huge bump.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just do. And then secondly, it's like okay, he says seven, then it's actually like 5.5 or six. Like who cares at that point?
Also, like
I have enough money.
Yeah, you said also like he would be like a top five paid head coach at that number, but like the Nets should expect to be a top five team next year, so that kind of makes sense. I don't know.
Right, exactly. And it's like you have to obviously all like the new assistants are getting paid a lot less. Like when Kenny got brought on, he's not going to get paid $7 million. Like the only guys that get paid that much are championship pedigree, which Ty Lue does have. Or someone getting like a lucrative deal because they're getting brought in from college, like a Beeline, even though that worked out for the Cavs, or Billy Donovan, or I think Stevens probably got, you know, it was different because he came in, probably what, 6 or 7 years ago at this point,
right?
A little longer when the salaries were more depressed, but that's kind of the premium it takes. So it's like, I don't know. I'm not going to like be in the weeds negotiating for a coach's salary because there is no opportunity cost, as you mentioned, for taking away from other people.
Yeah. And like, is Josiah going to be like, oh, I don't want to pay the luxury tax this year because I'm paying Ty Lue an extra like $1.5 million than what he's worth? Like, I don't see that happening. Like if the Nets are close, he's going to spend money. And if not, you know, it's a different story. But it doesn't count towards the salary cap. There's no penalty for paying him more. So, go ahead, Josiah, throw it at him. The improved Built Bar is even more delicious than before. They've got 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut options. Here are the 6 new flavors. You've got caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. They sound incredible. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate and they're soft and easy to chew. Built Bar is great for the health-conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, and great for the keto diet as well. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off of your next order. Once again, use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com.
Okay, enough. Enough talk, Marcus. Any playoff takes as the games have gotten kicked off again this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting because I feel like at the start of the bubble, there was kind of a lot of unpredictability and all the games were super close going down to the wire. And then I think maybe like the more time that the good teams have had to kind of get into gear, get their rhythm back, I think we're maybe seeing a little bit of separation between like the good teams and the weaker teams. Maybe some of that is injury. Like Portland put up a good fight in their first couple games, and then even in that game 5 they lost without Dame, they were battling till the end. But I feel like the Lakers, the Clippers, who advanced past Dallas today, like those top teams are kind of showing what they can do. The Bucks turned it around against the Magic to win in 5, so like I think we're getting towards a point now where things are getting turned up. I don't know if you watched game 1 between Boston and Toronto today, but Boston looked really, really good. And Toronto had a lot of the problems that we talked about, Josh, when they played the Nets, but now they're not playing the Nets. They're playing the Celtics, who have much better shooters, much better players, much better defenders, especially, I thought. And Toronto kind of got smothered in that game. So I don't know. Right now, I would probably lean towards Boston in that series, and then the Clippers and the Lakers I would still lean towards. And then, I don't know, I'm really intrigued by Milwaukee and Miami. Do you have a feel for that series, or is there a different one maybe that intrigues you more?
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see how a couple of these, you know, Western Conference series finish out. I think Denver-Utah has been a really fun one for me. So, you know, obviously Utah might have be finishing them out by the time you guys hear this, and that game tonight. And then Houston-OKC has been a really fun one, but obviously Houston just took control in the second half last night. I am looking forward to Miami-Milwaukee. I think it's, you know, kind of like an interesting matchup in the sense that both teams are really centered around one or two kind of main guys and have a bunch of niche role players. So, you know, I'm excited to see how Budenholzer thinks about taking away some of Miami's shooters, because they have a lot of them and guys that are more one-dimensional. And if they can do that, I think, you know, Bucks philosophy all year has been, you know, we're just going to completely shut down the paint but let you take threes. And Miami has guys that can go get really hot and go 7 of 10 from three if you let them. But on the other end, you know, I guess Bam is going to be the primary matchup on Giannis. Like, put Butler on him, but it's going to tire out whoever it is. And I'm just, you know, both of those guys are so important to the Heat's overall offense that if they're spending so much energy on defense, I just don't know if they're going to have the horses to beat the Bucks, even though, you know, Middleton and Bledsoe kind of jury's out if they're going to be consistent. Middleton obviously struggled a lot in the series against the Magic, as he always does. And then on the Raptors Celtics, I mean, the Raptors just looked low energy to me today. Like, Gasol especially was just like,
yeah, he was bad in the Nets series too. They just couldn't really take advantage,
but like so out of sorts on rotations, like times where he was hedging Howard in the pick and roll, but then the other guy was switching. So, but he, instead of like staying on the shooter, he was just recovering all the way back to the rim while the Celtics were like, are you just not going to guard me? And got a wide three at the top of the key. It was just like, he was just really out of sorts and couldn't take advantage of them on the offensive glass. And obviously that's not his like primary part of his game. He's not a super physical player. He's more of a good positional guy and obviously extremely skilled. But when you're playing Boston, you know, you have to kind of pound the glass against them, or if not, you may as well only go, you know, one big.
Yeah. I don't know. When the Nets beat the Bucks in a couple weeks ago now in the bubble, I kind of was like a little skeptical about them. And I kind of feel that way going into this Miami series, even though like I've seen a few people pick them as like a trendy upset pick. And that's a little bit scary to me, cause I don't want too much momentum on that side, but I think that'll be a fun series. And then for Boston and Toronto, like you said, like the Raptors just like really struggle to score in the half court, and the Celtics have really long defenders, and like, I don't know, like the Raptors were able to take advantage of like the Nets switching a lot of the time on defense. And so you would get like Van Vliet matched up against Jared Allen on the perimeter. But like with the Celtics, they're kind of playing Marcus Smart as like a power forward at times. And he's like guarding Siakam in the post. And so if Siakam's the screener, like, and Smart gets switched on to Van Vliet, that's not an advantage for Toronto at all. So there's really no opportunities for them to score in the half court. I thought Serge Ibaka gave them some life early on. He was good in the Nets series also. And I feel like maybe that's the adjustment for Toronto, is to like start him over Gasol. But they kind of, Toronto, like with Anunoby, who's not the best shooter, Siakam, who's improved a ton, but is not the best outside shooter, like, they kind of need Lowry and Van Vliet to take over. And given the fact that the Celtics have like some really great defenders to throw at them between Smart and Jaylen Brown, Tatum, and then they have guys off the bench they can throw at them. Like it's a tough matchup for Toronto.
Yeah, no, it really is. I'm curious to see what they do. And Pascal has to be the guy. And he just wasn't today. He wasn't being super like, you know, authoritative and aggressive. He was settling for a lot of threes and he couldn't hit any of them. And he just didn't look like himself. And, you know, he got off to a really hot start this year, but has cooled down considerably, like much like I lament with Garrett Temple. So he needs some of that first like month and a half, 2 months, Pascal Siakam, for the Raptors to really be the favorites in this one, just because they need someone to be that kind of premier ISO scorer, which obviously isn't kind of core to what they do and their philosophy, but they really need that against a team of Celtics that are so smart as team defenders and obviously can take away what you want to do. But I think really interesting matchups all around. I am excited that we have basketball back. the first round was a bit of a slog in some of these series, but glad we're kind of getting to more high-end basketball. And we'll be with you periodically to cover it. And, of course, any news on the Nets coaching search, we will be there. Rest in peace, Uncle Cliffy, Cliff Robinson, former Net, and I think someone that Marcus and I love from the TV show Survivor. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets, JMBass underscore. Marcus is at Marcus Bearhall. Keep supporting the cause. Black Lives Matter. Until next time, be well.
Bye.